And joining us now, the former British Member of Parliament, George Galloway.
Thank you very much.
Nice to have you in that chair, sir.
Thank you.
Well, what brings you to Canada in 2010?
Well, as I was saying before I was rudely interrupted 18 months ago.
Now, you better explain that reference, because for those who don't remember that you tried to come here.
Well, I was due to make, I think, five-city speaking tour. I was in the United States on another speaking tour. Indeed, I was in the United Nations building, speaking in the United Nations building, when I heard the frankly surreal news that the government of Canada had banned me as a terrorist and security risk, which, given at that time I had been sitting in the British Parliament for almost a quarter of a century, must have come as a bit of a shock to the Mr. Speaker and Her Majesty, in whose Parliament I sat as a member of the loyal opposition and later a member of the governing party. It was a surreal experience.
Just for the record, I'm not sure they called you a terrorist. I think they said you aided and abetted terrorists.
No, they called me a terrorist. I have the documents. This was dealt with comprehensively later in the High Court in Canada.
So what's changed? They didn't let you in back in March of 2009. Now you're here.
Well, the Honourable Judge gave them a 60-page judicial caning in which he found that they had misled the public, that they had said one thing to the public but something different behind the scenes, that the delivering of humanitarian aid to Gaza cannot possibly be equated with terrorism. Indeed, and I paraphrase, that the word would have no meaning if the delivery of ambulances and wheelchairs and medicine and the funds to keep the hospitals going could be described thus. What would you use to describe real terrorism if that could be described as terrorism? So here I am, and of course, as any bookseller could have told them, the book you try to ban always makes the bestseller list. The five-city tour is now a 10-city tour, and the audience of hundreds is now an audience of thousands. And of course, the pleasure, honor of appearing on important television programs like this, which I might not have been able to do.
Well, actually, truth be told, we tried to get you in here a little while ago. Okay. And you did manage to get across the border. This was several years ago, but apparently when you got here, my recollection is you said the task of getting across the border was so difficult that you were exhausted and you canceled on us.
Oh, really?
So we're glad to have you here this time. We've been trying to get you in that chair for about 6 or 7 years.
I'm glad to be here finally.
You're going to Jason Kenney's office as well, right? The Minister of Citizenship?
Yes, because I don't believe that he has accounted for what the judge held him to be responsible for. And in a democracy, it's important that ministers are accountable. In fact, I must tell you, looking at the 60-page judgment, there are not many ministers in many governments that would still be in their post after being criticized in the way that he was by the judge. But hey, that's the current political moment in Canada. I've challenged him to a public debate. He's declined the debate. But just like for older viewers, when Cassius Clay pursued Sonny Liston looking for the fight, I'm going to take the fight to his constituency office in Calgary.
Is he going to be there when you're there?
Well, I hope so. I'm looking for him.
What do you intend to tell him?
I want to say that free speech within the limitations of libel and defamation and, of course, the prohibition, correct prohibition on hate speech and whipping up racial and religious hatred is a very important principle in a democracy, and it's the only way that the public can be truly informed about important decisions.
You did actually get to speak last time you tried to come here. I mean, eventually it was over a video conference. So
yes,
you did get your message.
Of course, seeing the whites of someone's eyes is better than a video conference. And I think the irony was not lost on people that here I was in the United States giving a speech from the country which had suffered the gravest act of terrorism, from New York City, the place where that terrorism occurred, to Canada, where I was forbidden to enter.
Well, each government presumably is allowed to make its own decisions about who's allowed in or not.
Yes, but it's passing strange that a fellow Commonwealth government could describe a British Member of Parliament in the terms they had, whilst the United States government was perfectly happy and is perfectly happy.
I can't say for sure, but my hunch is that one of the reasons that Jason Kenney and the Conservative government were uncomfortable with the notion of you coming here was that they saw videos such as the one I'm about to play.
An Israeli broadcast, I just remind your viewers.
Okay, we'll play the clip and then obviously we'll want to hear your comment on it.
Sure.
If you would, Michael, roll the tape.
Here is the money.
هذا هو المال.
This is not charity.
هذا ليس صدقة.
This is not charity.
هذا ليس صدقة.
This is not charity.
هذا ليس صدقة.
This is politics.
هذه سياسة.
The government of Palestine is the best people.
حكومة فلسطين هي خير الناس.
Where this money is needed.
خير من يقدم لهم هذا المال وخير من يحتاجونه.
We're giving this money now.
نحن نعطي هذا المال الآن.
To the government of Palestine.
لحكومة فلسطين.
And if I could,
ولو استطعت,
I would give them 10 times, 100 times more.
سأعطيهم عشرة.
Let's just clarify the source of the video. It did say on there that it was Al Jazeera. It also said it was Memory. Which
Memory is an Israeli propaganda outfit. Look, the judge has already made his judgment on this video. This video was the government's case. But the judge opined, I think in a way which oughtn't to be contradicted, that delivering humanitarian aid to the besieged people of Gaza through the elected authority in Gaza cannot possibly be equated with terrorism. What I did there, what you saw me doing there, is exactly what Oxfam does, exactly what any NGO does. They have to deal. I was giving this money to the Ministry of Health.
But I just this want to be clear on the source of the video. You seem to question the source of the video.
No, I'm questioning the editing of the video.
It didn't look like there was any editing.
Well, of course, by editing, I mean there's no video of the remarks immediately preceding the remarks that
you said what you said.
I said everything that I said, and I'm very proud to defend it. But the preceding remarks would have contextualized it for you.
So what were the preceding remarks?
The preceding remarks were that the nurses and the doctors in the hospitals in Gaza had not been paid a salary for several months.
So you helped
and
do that.
This money paid for their salary. The judge accepted that. Couldn't do otherwise. The documentation was there, the receipts were there, the testimony from the nurses and the doctors thanking me, and so on, was all there. So the point I'm making to you, Steve, is that if that is equated with terrorism, then the word no longer has any meaning, and that's dangerous.
Well, let's just really be clear here. Do you believe Hamas is a terrorist organization, as the government of Canada does?
No, I don't. That's not to say they haven't committed terrorist acts. They have. The African National Congress, under the leadership of Nelson Mandela, the greatest man of the 20th century, committed terrorist acts. But it was not a terrorist organization. If you stop the sentence at terrorist acts, you miss the point. The African National Congress was struggling for the liberation of their country, in the course of which they committed some acts which were terrorist acts. And Hamas have done the same.
So how would you describe Hamas?
It's a national liberation movement trying to liberate its country from illegal 6-decades-long occupation and to return the word Palestine to the map.
But you clearly do, it sounds like you also have some concerns about their tactics and strategies and methods.
I do have concerns about both their tactics and their strategy, and above all, their ideology. I'm not a supporter of Hamas. I don't want Palestine.
You're not a supporter of Hamas.
I have never in all my life been a supporter of Hamas.
You just gave them money.
I didn't give them money. You've missed the point I've been making.
Try to get it. That's why I want to get it clear.
I gave it to the elected government to pay the nurses and the doctors in the hospitals in Gaza.
But they are.
I don't know. You've missed this.
They're in the government.
They are the government.
They
were the elected government. I have said 10,000 times, let me make it 10,001. I have all my life, for 35 years in this cause, supported the line of the late President Arafat, the deadly rivals of Hamas. I am not now, I have never been, I don't expect ever to be a supporter of Hamas. But I am a supporter of democracy. And we can't choose the leadership of the Palestinian people.
Well, they did.
The people of Palestine must be allowed to do that.
I'm just wondering though, excuse me, is that... I don't want to accuse you of being cute with the language. You're saying you're not a supporter of Hamas, you're a supporter of the government, but the government is Hamas.
No, I'm a supporter of whichever government is freely chosen by the Palestinian people.
Okay.
I would not have voted for them. If I had a vote, I'd vote to remove them from office. I don't have a vote in Canada either. There's no prizes for guessing how I'd vote if I was in Canada, but it's not my business who rules Canada any more than it's my business who governs Palestine.
You're a controversial guy, that's pretty obvious, and it seems as if you were in the British House of Commons a long time, And then in the last election in 2010, where they formed the coalition government, you lost and you're not there anymore. Do you think people are tired of you?
Well, they took a long time to get tired of me. I was there for a quarter of a century. I won five general elections in two countries, in three constituencies, and guess what? Next May, watch this space, I'll be back as a parliamentarian again. So, no, I don't think so. On the contrary.
You don't think the controversial messages caught up with you and they finally said, okay, we've had enough of them? You came third.
I came third in a wholly different riding. I left my riding and stood somewhere else for complicated political reasons, which I won't bore you with. I am drawing big crowds in a foreign country. Hundreds of people every night are paying very good money to come and hear me speak. I don't think there's much evidence that people are tired of me. If they were, I don't think I'd be sitting on your show.
There's no question you draw the crowds. Mm. There's no question. What do you think it is about your message that seems to be so attractive to so many people coming out to want to hear you?
Well, I think the issues that I'm dealing with are central to world affairs. When I started in this in 1975, I had no idea that in 2010, the question of Palestine would be as central, maybe more, as they were in the 1970s. It just so happens that I have specialized in an area that's absolutely pivotal. It's a fulcrum of international affairs. If there's no peace in Palestine, there'll be no peace in the Muslim world, there'll be no peace, therefore, in the world as a whole. So it's pretty crucial, whether you agree with my line or not, it's pretty crucial that we have all the information we can before making political judgments about where we should stand.
Now, you've clearly planted your flag on one side of the equation.
Sure.
The government of Canada, in its judgment, has planted its flag quite firmly on the other side. I'm not sure there's a more pro-Israeli government in the Western world, frankly, than the government of Canada. They're entitled to make that call, as are you entitled to make your call. So what's the problem?
Well, I'm not a state. Canada is a state which ought to have a nuanced position in international affairs. Because Canada's national interests are being imperiled by this over-identification, not with Israel. I'm not complaining about them being with Israel. They're with the Netanyahu outfit that runs affairs for the time being.
Well, they're with the government of Israel in the same way with the government of the Gaza.
Well, they're actually backing. I'm not a backer of the politics of Hamas. On the contrary, I told you a minute ago that I actually opposed their political line.
But they were with the other guys before that. They were with Olmert before Netanyahu got in there.
Yes,
they're
but
with Israel.
They have transformed Canada into a kind of embassy for the most extreme Israeli government there's ever been. And yet, just down the road, I know you don't like me to conflate the two countries, but the White House is spitting mad about the humiliation which Netanyahu is visiting on the Obama administration. The whole of the rest of the world is, you talked about, tired, pretty tired of Israeli intransigence, and yet it is backed to the nth degree by the government here in Ottawa. And I, for the life of me, cannot work out why. What's in that for Canada? Harper said the other day that he was prepared to pay any price. He might have added Kennedy-esque, bear any burden in order to support Netanyahu. Why? What's in that for Canada?
I don't know what's deep in his soul, but I'll take him at his word, which is he believes in democracies. And he says that's the one democracy in the region, and he's with them.
Well,
that's the kind of guy he is.
It's a strange kind of democracy that for 42 years in some cases, 62 years in other cases, has occupied another people, is occupying their land in flat defiance of international law.
That's a bit simplistic, isn't it?
No. International law is very clear. In 1967, 43 years ago, Israel was instructed by the Security Council unanimously to withdraw from the territories they'd just occupied in the Six-Day War. Well, 43 years later, they have not done so.
Provided they be allowed to live in secure borders, which is not the case right now.
That is not the international law. Resolutions 242
and 338
make no reference to that at all. They say flatly, it is inadmissible to occupy other people's territories by force. You must withdraw. And they have not withdrawn. Instead of being punished by the governments of the world, especially Canada, they're rewarded and lauded for this gigantic breach of international law.
I guess the bottom line here, though, is that you've analyzed the situation and you see injustice and you have decided that in order to pursue peace in the world and give the world a better shot at peace, you're planting your flag with one side. The government of Canada has made the same call. They just disagree with you. Why is all of that illegitimate?
Well, why is the Canadian government in such a different position to the other governments in the world? You yourself said, and you understated it, that there's no more pro-Israeli government in the whole world than Canada. All the other governments have decided that there has to be some kind of compromise here, that there has to be some kind of recognition of what the Palestinians have suffered and some kind of justice offered to them as a means of bringing this conflict to a close.
Don't think they deny that?
Well, they're supporting a government which is in flat contradiction to that, despite the feelings of the overwhelming majority of public opinion in the world, and indeed the governments of the world, including the government of the United States. That's an odd place to be, that's all I'm saying.
Okay. Let me read something. Michael, let's do the Globe and Mail quote here. This is Mike Blanchfield writing the Globe and Mail back in September. Talking about you, he said, had he been really serious, he certainly would have attempted to come to Canada in 2009 and do the job he wanted to do. His real job was to actuate a PR stunt, which he was successful at, said Bernie Farber, chief executive of the Canadian Jewish Congress. I think you said it yourself, in a sense, getting banned was the best thing that happened to you. You sell more tickets, you sell more books now as a result of it. So was getting banned a PR stunt, as your critics have suggested?
Well, you'd have to ask the people who banned me. I didn't ask to be banned.
But did you enjoy the fruits of it?
No. And I would much rather have avoided being branded a terrorist and a security risk across the whole of the world, which had very serious consequences for me. It was used ruthlessly by my opponents in the general election last May. It caused me a delay at every international border that I thereafter crossed.
Do you think
it
helped you lose the election?
Yes.
It contributed to it.
My opponents ruthlessly deployed the fact that I had been branded a terrorist in Canada. And
so something that happened in Canada affected a UK election.
Yes. And
I
will be seeking redress for all the inconvenience and harm and damage that I believe I suffered as a result of that.
Are you
the good news for the taxpayer in Canada is that anything I get, I'm going to spend in Canada, so it won't be leaving the country.
Are you going to sue Jason Kenney?
Yes, we're working on a series of lawsuits across several fronts, abuse of process, breach of privacy, defamation, and these cases will make their way through the Canadian legal system.
Not that I want to give you any fuel for your fire, which clearly is still burning bright, but okay, Michael, let's put up the next graphic here. Attention grabber, this one's called. At this point, I'm going to wait for the lawsuit to actually be filed before commenting on its contents. Mr. Galloway's last publicity stunt involved him wearing a skin-tight red leotard on Celebrity Big Brother and then pretending to be a cat licking milk from the palms of a B-list celebrity. Minister Kenney has no interest in getting entangled in another one of George Galloway's desperate cries for someone, anyone, to notice him. That's Kenney's communications director who said that. Does that change how you view a potential lawsuit?
No, because these are the everyday knockabout of political jibes. I've got no problem with anything you quoted there, except to say that Mr. Kenney can run, but he can't hide. He's already entangled with me, whether he meets me in debate or not. His name will forever after be associated with mine, at least so far as I'm concerned. The defamation I'm talking about is the defamation that I am a terrorist, that I am a security threat. I'm neither, and the judge has already found that. So we're coming to get him.
Do you give aid and or comfort to terrorists? Let's acknowledge what the court said. You're not a terrorist, but do your words, your actions, your financial contributions give aid and comfort to terrorism?
Well, if I was giving aid to terrorism, I'd be a terrorist. So it goes without saying, because I'm not a terrorist, that I don't give aid. What I try to do is drain the swamp in which terrorism is breeding. And this is the fundamental point, so far as I'm concerned. Western double standards and injustice and occupation and war is filling a swamp with hatred and bitterness in which terrorism is breeding. I said 4 days after 9/11 in the House of Commons that if it was a question of just going to the Tora Bora and Karpao, this Mephistopheles could be knocked out and our problems would be solved, that would be very much easier than the problem we actually face, which is that there are millions, tens of millions, maybe hundreds of millions of Muslims who are boiling with anger and rage at the double standards and injustice of Western policy towards the Muslim world, and Palestine's at the heart of that. So I'm actually the anti-terrorist, I'm the person who's saying that unless we drain this swamp, doesn't matter how many fly swats we invest in, the monstrous mosquitoes that are coming out of that swamp will get through.
Tell me your view on this, though. If you believe the government of Canada is too one-sided in the Middle Eastern question and needs to put some water in its wine, could they not say the same for you, that if both sides moved a little closer to the middle and spoke a little less harshly of the other side, the chances for peace would improve?
But I'm not a state. If I was the Prime Minister of Britain, I would not be able to campaign one-sidedly for one side of this argument. I'm an activist trying to change the balance of public opinion in the world so that the governments of the world take a more balanced and fair stance.
I understand.
That's a fundamental difference.
I appreciate that. You're not a state, but you're probably better known and more influential. How many members of the House of Commons are there? 600 and some odd? You're probably better known than 95% of them. So you do have influence beyond your position at the moment.
I'm trying to rally support for the Palestinian people so that we can effect a change amongst the states towards that area. And I think I've been reasonably successful over the last 35 years. That's why the blindest supporters of Israel hate me so very much.
We've got a few minutes left, and let me try one more thing with you, and that is this. I'd like to talk about your suggestion that if the Israeli-Palestinian issue could somehow be solved, we'd be living in an extremely different world. I don't have to tell you there are those who believe that that's just not the case, that even if you were to solve the Israeli-Palestinian thing, you know, Al-Qaeda is still out there. Iran is still out there trying to develop the bomb. You know, Iraq, while, you know, it's not what it was under Saddam Hussein, is still a long way from a Jeffersonian democracy. There's still lots of problems in that region of the world, and if Israel-Palestine were to resolve itself, where's the evidence that somehow the angels would come out and start singing Hosanna?
None. I didn't say it was the only problem. I said it was the central problem. There are three things that we could do. I've got a three-point plan. First of all, justice for the Palestinian people. Second, the withdrawal of Western occupation forces from Muslim countries. And the third, which I believe is fundamentally, in the long term, the most important of the three, we should stop propping up the corrupt kings and the puppet presidents who rule as dictators most of the Muslim world from one end to the other. It's because we are identified as the armorers, as the financiers, as the diplomatic and political red carpet rollers of all these tyrants that the people of the Muslim world regard us as hypocrites, as employing double standards, as so-called democracy fighters in Iraq, but supporting the tyranny in Saudi Arabia, where there's no freedom or liberty or democracy of any kind and never will be as long as we keep the tyrants there in power. And I could replicate that across dozens of examples.
Just tell
me where, the three-point plan.
I understand. Tell me where you think Western troops are occupying, Islamic countries, you were saying, or Muslim countries?
Well, Iraq,
Arab countries?
Afghanistan. Well, supporting the Israeli occupation of Palestine?
Afghanistan, theoretically, Western troops are there on the invitation of the Karzai government.
We imposed the Karzai government. Frankly, that's beneath you. That's an absurd contention. We invaded, occupied the country, and placed Karzai in power.
Okay, but do you believe polls? Because polls in Iraq and Afghanistan, I'm told, obviously it depends which ones you look at, say that there's a great deal of support for having those troops there still for a while until things get more secure.
I don't see any evidence to support that at all. I don't know which polls they're giving you.
I wish I could cite them at the moment, but I've seen them.
The facts on the ground are that this Taliban, which is not being trained by anyone, far less the brilliant trainers of the Canadian Armed Forces, is winning this war on the battlefield. So much so that we're now talking to the Taliban. The people we went there to extirpate, we're now practically begging to come to the negotiating table and agree a settlement with us. I'm not against that, by the way. I think it should have been done years ago. But it's a measure of the fact that our attempt to impose Karzai, the most corrupt, vote-stealing, pocket-filling, drug-dealing, warlord-appeasing leader in the world has simply not grafted on to Afghan society.
Get off the fence and tell me what you really think about him.
Well, his brother is the main drug dealer.
He's telling me we got to go.
It's a government of warlords. I'm sorry I've gone on too long.
Not at all, not at all. My fault for not bringing it to an end, on time, as they say. Mr. Galloway, we're glad we finally got you in that chair, and it's
terrific.
Good to meet you. Thank you for your
Anytime.
Time, sir.
Thank you.